Thank you for tuning in to Aster Investment Management's podcast series. This week, our Chief Investment Officer, John Eckstein, and Senior Managing Director, Mac O'Brien, discuss the current economic outlook in the era of COVID-19. Thank you both for joining us today.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us. It's another edition of Aster's Economic Week in Review with Mac O'Brien and the CIO of Aster, John Eckstein. John, how are you?
Hey, Mac. How's it going?
Going great. Friday afternoon, May 8th, some significant data to talk about. Sibila, of course, thank you for the introduction. So, John, give us a preview of what we're talking about today.
I think we'll start with the payroll numbers, which came out a couple hours ago. We'll talk about claims as we have been, and then their services PMI came out, and that's auto sales. We're going to talk about that from the perspective of economic data. I do see a few green shoots, maybe from the earnings calls that I've been listening to. And then we can talk a little bit about which ETFs the Fed might be buying. And I thought I might be also interested to talk about, like, what's the case that the stock market has it right? Like, you hear a lot of people saying, how can the stock market be up with unemployment where it is, but what's the best case for the stock market? So I thought that was a decent agenda.
Sounds great. Let's get right into it. We are going to combine the claims and the payroll data today. So for the folks that are listening, non-farm payroll Friday, which is typically the first Friday of the month.
Unless the first Friday is the first.
And that is a very important day for economic data because the all-encompassing payroll report comes out. So John, run us through what happened today.
Yeah, so the payroll report, just to give you background, it's important to us because it's relatively timely. We're talking about stuff that happened a couple of weeks ago, and it's extremely comprehensive. And of course, you know, everybody employed is like sort of the sum of the economy. It's the best number that we get. The change in non-farm payrolls is down 20 million, which is, you know, much, much higher than it's ever been.
Unemployment rate jumped to 14.7%.
Unemployment jumped from 14.7%. So in the note in the report, the Bureau of Labor Statistics noticed that, like, they think some people have been misclassified. And
talk to me about that, because I tried to read that, and it was basically saying that people that could have filed for unemployment but didn't, it wasn't that. What was the terminology they used? It's they had to be 5% higher if they would have included those people, right?
Yeah. So the idea is that people who were absent from work due to coronavirus-related business closures should have been classified as unemployed and a temporary layoff. And some people were just noted as absent from work.
Got it.
And so, so the numbers I've seen show that it's maybe, you know, the unemployment rate is maybe 20% already. And that's what you see the underemployment rate at is about 22 right now.
22.8. So let's round up and say underemployment's at 23, and that's up from like 8%, right? I mean, it's a huge jump in underemployed.
Yeah. And it's these are numbers which are moving much, much faster than we're used to seeing in any time in modern records.
Yeah.
Another way to think about it is the prime age employment population ratio. So that's as people from the ages of 25 to 54. Mm-hmm. And that went from, let's say, 81%. To about 69%. So a huge drop in the number of people, prime age people employed, and much, much steeper than we're used to seeing.
Summarize it real quick, John. So we have unemployment rate at 15%, essentially. If you count everyone that the Labor Department says you should count, it's closer to 20%.
Yeah,
it's 20 million people or 20 and a half million people not receiving paychecks anymore, which factors into that huge unemployment rate. Underemployed at 22 or 23%, up from 8%, which means people are still working, but they're not working nearly as much as they should be. And then I read a stat that says high school, people without high school degrees jump from 6.8% unemployed to 21% unemployed. And if you have a college degree, it's 8.4% unemployed. Yeah,
so there is some, I don't know if there's good news in this exactly, but one thing to think about is that the extra, you know, the $1,200 stimulus and the extra payments from the federal government, those will go a lot further for people in minimum wage jobs or people without high school diplomas than they would for, you know, Wall Street economists, say.
True. Another green shoot is of the survey of the 20 million people not receiving the paycheck. Of those surveyed, 18 million said that they expect to be back to work sooner than later. in the same
job. 70, so we're seeing like 72% jobs lost or categorized as temporary layoff.
Right.
That's from the business, the establishment side. The risk is that that becomes permanent. So like we've been saying all along, like the big question is how do these layoffs become permanent and what comes back? And that's what it's too early to see.
Well, I think the other thing to really consider, John, is that this, I mean, we're looking at a month of data, right? This was the April payroll report.
Yep. And this is for about 3 weeks ago. So
yeah, but the whole point is that this is not us looking back at a previous recession and analyzing it. This is us looking back at the beginning of a recession, and there's still a lot of data that's going to come out that's going to be worse. We're at 20% unemployment now, in reality. And this is going to most likely creep up to 30, 40%. Well, 40 is probably aggressive, but we're still at the tip of the spear in terms of the economic impact of coronavirus.
Well, maybe. There's definitely more job loss baked in the cake, right? Because next week is the reference week for the May report. And we know that we've been losing jobs in the last 3 weeks with jobless claims, right? So we lost another 3 million this week. It's hard to see that even going to zero. You know, hard to see that. I mean, that maybe we lose 2 million instead of 3 million next month, but it's hard to see that going, you know, back to the normal levels of 100,000 or 200,000. So, yeah, so there's definitely more job losses baked in the cake. But what you just pointed out is that, you know, people are still attached to their labor force, right? Both the businesses are expecting to rehire their workers and the workers are expecting to be rehired. So, this isn't the same as, you know, people's unemployment in the middle of the global financial crisis where, sorry, Mac, we have to lay you off and, you know, because we're shrinking our, you know, widget factory or whatever. So people do have an attachment. The labor workers and firms are still attached to each other more tenuously than we want, but still attached. And so the big question is how many people start to come back.
And then you've talked about it in past weeks, but what's the second and third order effects of businesses operating not at full capacity? And how does that...
Yeah, that's a big unknown too, right? So there's states that are starting to open up. Even some parts of New York are probably going to be opening up in the next couple of weeks. But, you know, people were staying home before the stay-at-home orders were lifted, and it's going to be a few weeks before we really have a sense on how much people are willing to go out and what's possible in this new era.
Right.
One thing I do want to say before we leave the topic of the labor market is that, you know, we were talking about what to cover today. I said, you have to be careful not to look at the earnings on this report. And you pointed out why exactly, right? So actually earnings are up, you know, 8% year on year when we've been lucky to get 3%. And that's because basically, like, as you pointed out, the job losses have come disproportionately from lower income workers, right? So basically, we fired a bunch of low-income workers, and so that raises the average wage, doesn't take the composition into account.
Right. So PMI is the service side of the economy, the ISM non-manufacturing side, which essentially is the side of the economy that's not manufacturing, right? All the goods and services produced, everywhere from restaurant workers to airlines. And the preliminary data came in at 41.8. The last is at 52. Remember, 50 is that magic number, where above 50 is you're expanding and below 50 is it's in a contractionary state. So with the preliminary number of 41.8, John, what does that tell you?
Yeah, so there's two. There's the ISM non-manufacturing, the ISM and the market services. Those are covering basically the same thing. So what we talked about last week with the manufacturing survey, we mentioned that one of the positive, quote unquote, positive things was slower delivery times, because usually that means that your vendors are so jammed up with orders, they can't get you your flour out to the cookie factory. But now it means something different, right? And so like that's just a flaw in the way they've constructed their index. So that 41.8 should be lower.
Got it.
So if you look at the market survey, for example, Market is the name of the company that puts out another survey, and it's constructed the same similarly, but it's down at 27 versus 42 for the ISM number.
That one doesn't put as much of an emphasis on delayed orders.
It doesn't have the order speed in it. I believe it has order speed for the manufacturing, but not for services.
So we're looking at just a, as to be expected, a decimated service side of the economy at the moment.
Yeah, if we go back to the labor market for one sec, you know, amusement and recreation industries is down 60%. That's lost 100 million jobs. Clothing and clothing accessory stores down 60%, lost 700,000 jobs. Arts, entertainment, recreation lost 1.3 million jobs. That's down 50%.
Personal leisure and hospitality, which I think you just said, is down 7.7 million jobs at 47%.
Yeah. So, and the only things that are going, there's not much that's going up, right? So the losses are coming where we sort of expected them to.
Right.
So the services PMI is not a lot of green shoots there.
No. I kind of keep a beat on, there's certain websites you can go to when a business is going under. If a restaurant will put all their restaurant equipment, you know, you can buy all high-end, you know, a steakhouse in my neighborhood is, they said they're folding. You can buy all their steakhouse grills and equipment and everything for like whatever the price was. When I go to that website and you see more and more of these restaurants that seem like they're just like, I'm out, right? And maybe they're just declaring bankruptcy and they'll reopen somewhere else. But you're starting to see this kind of trickle through to businesses not making it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that is a real concern.
So somewhat on the service side of the economy and also on the manufacturing side of the economy is you have motor vehicles, right? They're produced, but now let's talk about the actual sales of motor vehicles. And I believe the number is 8.6 million, down from 11.4. That doesn't seem too bad to me, John.
Yeah, that's not so bad. That's not so bad. I wonder why. I wonder who's buying. So that's April. So I wonder who's buying a car in April. I told you my buddy did because his car like burnt down.
And then, you know, I was reading, I kind of go to some rail blogs and statistics once in a while, rail being the freight, you know, stuff that's being carried across the United States on railroads. And the biggest thing I saw was motor vehicles and parts. That stuff that's being transported on the rails are down 88% last week, the week ending May 2nd. And it's down, I'm looking at all these categories, oil and metallic ores, grain, forest products, coal, chemicals, and motor vehicle sales year over year, or year to date rather, it's the biggest decrease at around 20, it looks like 8% I'm looking on this graph right here. So something's not adding up between the actual cars that are being sold and the stuff that's moving across the U.S. in terms of on railroads.
Yeah, that number is much lower than for the... The rail industry as a whole is not at record lows. It's low, but not, you know, unheard of. It's actually similar to the number of rail cars they were moving around the oil patch recession in 2016. Another thing is you look at the index of used vehicle value is down about 20%, which is a big move for the month. So I think there's no question that the vehicle sales are quite weak.
So John, and the email you sent me that outlined what we were going to talk about, you saw some green shoots from some earning calls. Specifically, you said Lyft and Wendy's. I didn't listen to the earnings call, and I'm kind of curious as to what green shoots you heard. So shoot.
Yeah. So for both those companies, they're seeing, so sometimes you just get a little bit more color from the CEO talking. Like it's not so much that their earnings are up or down. I don't think either of them are doing particularly. Wendy's is probably doing okay, but they're running out of fresh beef. And Lyft is just laying off a bunch of people. But they're both seeing improvement, let's say, first week of May, last week of April versus the first week of April.
I got you. So they're seeing less bad information.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, I think the numbers for Wendy's was like, things are picking up in the last 2 weeks, say, versus the 4 or 5 weeks previous to that.
Yeah, I mean,
and so like more riders, even in New York, you know, people still not going to the airport, but people are going out more than they were 4 weeks ago. Let's say they're going out more last week than they were 4 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's you get a feeling of that happening across every state, even in Illinois, which I feel is perpetually locked down. It's kind of people have gotten the attitude where we're going to go over to our friend's house and sit in their backyard. Feel human again and have the kids play with other kids. And in Florida, you know, my dad sent me a picture and he was at a restaurant eating outside in a restaurant on a patio. I mean, so yeah, it's lifting, you know, just
there's people drinking on my street here in the city, you know, at a bar with to-go containers in a bar, people sort of standing outside. They can't go in the bar, but they get it from the window and they stand outside and are drinking kind of semi socially distant.
Yeah, I think people are itching to get back to some source of social normalcy. Now, because I'm interested, John, you mentioned the Wendy's beef situation. So I saw the same thing you saw, where Wendy's is like out of beef, right? And so let's just talk about that supply chain real quick. It's kind of a real world situation. I think a lot of our listeners either saw when they drove through that there was no beef at Wendy's, or maybe they saw it in the news like I did. But talking about the supply chain there and what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, I think the constraint, Wendy's has a sort of particular constraint in that part of their deal is that they're supposed to have fresh, never frozen beef. And I don't know that you can tell the difference, especially once it's covered in ketchup, but that's what they do. So I think that is part of the supply chain for them, which is they've had a hard time keeping track of. I think their sales are actually like even on the year. I think fast food in general has done okay, right? Where they lose a lot of their business customers that they used to have, but like all the fancier restaurants are shut down. So people are sort of forced to go to the only thing that's open. So I think fast food has done okay, in general. And, you know, we've been seeing, you know, a lot we've talked about here where there's these two parallel distribution chains, one for wholesale food going to restaurants and schools and prisons or whatever, and another going to your supermarket. And they don't mix as well as you would think they would, right? I mean, I'm sure they will respond. They can respond in time. But, you know, again, the severe, sharp nature of this recession means that people haven't had the opportunity to respond. And with something, with an asset that goes bad, like a big pile of meat, you know, there's limited stuff you can do with it in a month or two.
Yeah, interesting. You know, I mean, I had to basically just cut out fast food for myself because, like you said, we were getting it too frequently. And at some point I was like, enough is enough. You know, I'm just going to figure out something here. If the kids get fast food, I'm going another direction. Anyway. Yeah,
there's pizza. Like the only thing I've had is pizza.
Yeah, I've had it all, John. Every single day.
For listeners who don't know Mac, he's the young Adonis. He's very fit, and I can't believe that he's really eating a lot of junk food.
Tons of junk food. Yeah. Okay, so John, we've covered a lot. You know, mainly the labor market, I think, is the most important thing that's happening right now. Personally, anecdotally, I'm not going to go through a bunch of stories, but I don't have any positive stories to say. My friends that are in imaging, he's a doctor, and he said his business is down 85%, and he still owes his mortgage and his payroll. I have a buddy who is in commercial real estate. His business is down 100%. He has strip malls and things of the nature. I have friends that's in charity auction type of stuff. There are no events going on right now. So I don't see the economic underpinnings that would support the market going higher. Yet here we are. One of the things you said at the beginning of the podcast and you wrote in your email to me was, what is the case that the stock market actually has this right? What do you think?
Yeah, well, I think I think there's a few things. I think one is it's a bet that the support we're getting from the federal government is enough, right? When the federal government, meaning both the Federal Reserve System and the fiscal policy. And so the Fed buying, you know, owns 25% of outstanding government bonds and is going to be buying more stuff. And then the federal government, you know, has spent, you know, just said they have to borrow $3 trillion to make up for the money that they're spending this quarter. And so I think one thing is a bet that the support that the federal government broadly considered is putting out there. And I think that that's sort of the most important thing. I think the second thing is obviously it's a bet that there isn't going to be a significant repeat of what happened from the middle of March to the middle of April, right? Like we're going to gradually open up and we won't have to, between masks and social distancing and whatever, like we won't have to shut everything down again. And third, I think it's a bet that there isn't going, so we have this, you know, this short-term shock, you know, this one-month shock, everybody stay home. And now everybody sort of goes back to business. And I think it's a bet that there's not going to be sort of a typical recession on the back of this, you know, through the multiplier effects or second and third order effects like we've talked about a few times. I think that's the case. Plus the idea that tech has been so strong and tech has not really affected that much. Google says everyone's working from home till 2021 and they seem to be doing okay.
Yeah. Again, I don't see the connection between I mean, what's after today, the market's up. I mean, we're almost to the point where we're at a rounding error to get to break even for the year. I think the NASDAQ is up for the year, right? If I'm not mistaken.
But right now, yeah, NASDAQ's up almost 5% for the year, and the S&P is still down 10% of the year.
Yeah. So, I mean, 10% is not that big of a deal when you're coming off a year that the market was up, you know, 30% or whatever the case may be. So I guess, you know, like we see every week, time will tell as this all kind of washes out. People need to get back to work. Behavior, spending behavior and confidence can't change drastically from where it was over the past 5 years. And it's just a matter of time until we see how the, you know, first, second, third order effects happen and what restrictions are placed on group gatherings and how long this thing lasts. All right, John, well, that kind of wraps up what we were looking to talk about this week. Let's give the listeners a quick sneak preview as to what we're going to talk about next week. I'm looking at all the data that comes out. Before I rattle off the data points, what are you looking forward to the most in terms of data coming out next week?
Next week, probably claims will be the most important thing that we see. We will be interested in things like the retail sales. You start to actually get the Fed monthly surveys, as like an Empire Manufacturing survey, and we have some sentiment numbers, and that's what I'm going to be. And we do have inflation numbers next week as well. I'm not as interested in them. It's going to be hard to understand inflation for a long time, and I don't think any policymakers are really worried about inflation for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm looking at JOLTS. We know it's going to be bad, but I'm interested to see how many job openings there aren't in the U.S. economy compared to where it was 3-4 months ago.
Yep.
Consumer sentiment, I think you mentioned, I'm looking forward to seeing how the consumer has been affected by, you know, a full month of real data and what's been happening. And I don't see any housing information for next week, but I still am interested to see how the housing market falls out because we haven't seen any really bad data come out in terms of new home sales or existing home sales, et cetera. And you had mentioned some high frequency reports last week in terms of mortgage applications and whatnot. But yeah, let's put that in the docket to talk about next week because I think that's a real, you know, people are seeing for sale signs and I just don't know why they're, I can't imagine people are walking through the home, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think that's been a market that's been frozen. And I don't know for sure that like a lot of the people who, the sales that have been going through are stuff that was, you know, planned in February.
Yeah.
You also have seen the Mortgage Bankers Association is telling us like the percentage of mortgages in forbearance where there people are not making their payments, but not officially in default yet. That number has been going up. It's not really a number we have a big history on. We can't compare it to the global financial crisis because they just started releasing it a few weeks ago. But that's a number that's worth watching too.
All right. And then last thing I'll say is if maybe next week, let's pull some information on credit card debt and delinquencies and whatnot and see how many people are starting to not pay their credit card bills.
Yeah, I'm not sure that is coming out with the frequency that we can get it, but it's worth taking a look at.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, John, as always, awesome talking to you. Have an awesome weekend. Until next time.
Thanks, Mac. Have a good weekend.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
To learn more about Aster Investment Management's research and strategies, please visit us on the web at www.asterim.com or stay up to date by following us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and our app is also available on the App Store and Google Play. Thank you. Aster Investment Management, LLC, is a SEC-registered investment advisor. All information contained herein is for informational purposes only. This is not a solicitation to offer investment advice or services in any state where to do so would be unlawful. Analysis and research are provided for informational purposes only, not for trading or investing purposes. All opinions expressed are as of the date of publication and subject to change. They are not intended as investment recommendations.